three-ring circus that'll be going on in here, and that's for today only. They are going to record and videotape this lecture as part of a larger project. One of the good things of being at a big, comprehensive university like the University of Michigan is you interact with other people who are doing their own research projects.
Do you take a break after you?
I do take a break in the middle.
Okay, so we may not record the second part, which is the first.
Whichever you like.
I think we're just going to do the first hour.
Okay.
Okay, hi, I'm Sarah Briggs, and I'm from the English Language Institute. And I'm here on behalf of what we call the My Case Project, which is underway at the U of M's English Language Institute. The ELI is located in the Nubbs Building. It's a center which focuses not only on teaching, but on research in the area of English as a second language. My case stands for the Michigan Corpus of Academic Spoken English. A corpus is simply a collection of words. As an initial goal, we hope to build my case to the size of 1 million words. Eventually, we hope that the collection of linguistic data available in my case will help us observe patterns of language, patterns which will aid us have better tools for the teaching of English as a second language. In keeping with these goals, we are interested in patterns which are observable across the speech of different groups of people. We are not interested in the speech of any one individual. We are not interested in correct or proper speech, but rather than natural speech as it is spoken here at the university. We are not interested in individual teaching styles or in the content of a particular class. Our presence here is in no way an evaluation of this class. We are simply here in order to record spoken English language as part of our My Case project. My Case has been approved by the initial review board, and we have recently received the consent of your professor to video and audio tape this class for the purposes for which I have explained. Names and other identifying information will not be used for this project. If any of you do not wish to be videotaped or audiotaped, I would like at this time to give you an opportunity to object. By your silence, I'm assuming consent. I thank you for your attention. Should any of you decide after the class is over to withdraw your consent, please do not hesitate to let me know after class or email me, which your professor will have. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Okay.
I think the intent is just to see if people use big words or little in the classroom and what kind of words they use. And to once they know that, that should help them train TAs, train GSIs, help people speak English as a second language. So we'll see what comes out of it. Maybe I'll speak good today. Okay. So let me get to my notes. So I've already introduced myself. I've been at the university 3 years. I came here from the University of Texas. And before that, I went undergrad to University of Wisconsin. So I've always seen this as enemy territory, and 3 years of cashing paychecks is only gradually wearing me down. I will be the professor for the whole term in this course. That's different than we normally do it, and it'll be the first time in a while that one person has done the whole course. My own background is in microbiology and molecular biology, which means the first half of the course is sort of my natural half of the course. That's what I've taught before. When we get to the second half of the course, I'll be sort of winging it even more than I usually am. So we'll see how that goes. In theory, if you can learn evolution and ecology, I should be able to learn it just as well and teach it to you. Luckily, I've got 4 very good GSIs that are going to help me out this term. All of them are experienced veterans, and it is one of the pleasures teaching in spring term, besides just having a smaller class in general, that you get good veteran GSIs. So those 4 GSIs, and we may add one more, are Dan Graff, Tara Rajanimi, where's John and Lydia? John Sparks and Lydia Skrinikova, who is probably running late. In any event, one of them will be your GSIs, but all of them will have office hours and hours in the Science Learning Center where they can help you understand what I'm saying. Okay. My office hours, in fact, I didn't put down there, but they will basically be Mondays 12 to 2 or by appointment. So that puts it into the same time block as this class, and if that's a problem, just call me up or email me and set up a separate appointment. Okay, what will you need for this class? You will need the textbook. The textbook either comes as three softcover editions like this, or it comes as one hardcover version. I don't care which you buy, just make sure you buy the one with the elephant on the cover. This will be the same textbook that you use in Biology 154 if you go on to take that course. Lab manual is this one. That's the same one we've used throughout the year so far, so there should be copies of that in bookstores. You will need that starting tomorrow when labs start. Course pack is this thing that's available at Grade A Notes, which is upstairs in above Ulrich's on East U and South U. They may have it downstairs on the bookshelves too. I'm not sure about that. What I have tried to do in the course pack is put in those figures that I'm going to use during my lectures that I think would be helpful to you to have. For example, when I show this figure in a couple of days, I'm not interested in having you guys spend 3 minutes taking a timeout scratching all these little bonds in, okay? So I've put that overhead in there so you can just turn to that page in the course pack and make your notes on that. Some of you will want to use it like that. Some of you will just note the figure number and go back to it later. I wouldn't say that this is 100% necessary. It does have all the course policies in there, but mostly it's just figures that are already in your textbook. And I will try and point out when a figure that I'm using up here has an equivalent in the course pack, although I tend to forget those things. And then lastly, there may be listed in the bookstore is an optional thing for either a CD or a video called Siren. What these are sort of cartoon animations of several of the many of the important processes that we'll be covering in particularly in the first half of this term. So meiosis, mitosis, transcription, translation, DNA replication, all those kind of things. For me personally, I always found it was easier rather than a series of pictures if I actually had sort of a moving video that showed these processes in process, you know, as they move along. I may or may not show clips from this video in class. It just depends on how ambitious I get. This would be an optional thing for you guys to buy if you think it's helpful. I forget the price. I think it's somewhere between 10 and 20 bucks, probably on the upper end of that. Again, your choice whether to buy it. Let me know if this is not in videos in the bookstores. Okay, and say that again?
Will it be on reserve?
No, I'm not putting it on reserve. Okay, and if you haven't already gotten familiar with the Science Learning Center, that's 1720 Chemistry. The GSIs will hold some of their office hours there, and I will put copies of my lecture outlines on reserve there. I will also have them available on the web. I'll get to that in a second. So you can get it in either place. Okay, more administrative stuff. Lectures, 6 times 50 minutes a week. I know it's 3 2-hour blocks. I will treat them as if they were 6 different lectures. I will try and give a 5 to 10 minute break in between. I'm not always good about timing things so that the break comes exactly halfway through the period. Sometimes it will come, you know, at 55 past the hour. More often I will run long in the first lecture and it'll come at 5 after. But I will give you a break at some point or another. It gives you guys a chance to come up and ask questions, stretch your legs, get a smoke, whatever. You all get fidgety after an hour of listening to me. As far as the web goes, I will put outlines of my stuff on the web. I'm not a big fan of giving you complete notes either on reserve or on the web, so this is as detailed as it will get in terms of what I'm going to give you. That web address you can get to through the Department of Biology homepage, but here is the direct long link for it. I think this is also in, if I was smart, I'd put this in your course policies in the course pack. But I mean, actually that period isn't there. Okay, looks like I was not smart, so you better copy this down or browse to it through the department's homepage. I already have the first 2 weeks worth of outlines there, basically everything up until the first exam, and I have the three exams that were given in the spring term version of this course last spring up there. So if you want old exams, those are available there too. And I think after we give the first exam, I'll put up all the stuff leading up until the second exam. That's all easy because that's the part of the course I've done before. I probably will get farther behind in the last part of the course. So for now, there's a bonanza of stuff there. Okay, labs start tomorrow. The schedule's in the course pack. Lab is worth 100 points in the class. There will be three exams that are each 100 points. So the net sum of that is that there's 400 points in the class, and lab counts one quarter of that. Your GSIs will tell you how they're going to break up lab points, and it will be slightly different from one GSI to the next. The exams are Monday, May 18, 7 to 9 p.m. This definitely is in the course pack and up on the web. Monday, June 8. 7 to 9 p.m. And the final or the last exam is Monday, June 22 from 8 to 10 a.m. I don't make these decisions. They just tell me when it is, and that's when our final is scheduled. None of the exams will be comprehensive. So once I tell you that this material is on this exam, it won't appear on any other exams, of course. Some of the topics are, by their nature, build on earlier stuff. Okay, one other thing about the exams will be 75 points worth of multiple choice, and I think that that's likely to be 25 three-point questions, and they're going to be 25 points of short answer, and that's likely to be 5 5-point questions. One thing about my exams, people don't like them. They're hard. What I try and do is make the multiple choice easy and medium, and I make the short answers medium and hard. My feeling is that in order to get an A, or what I think of as an A student, I think of that as somebody who can take one fact I've said and another fact I've said and put them together and reach a conclusion that I haven't said. So I will definitely put things, particularly in the short answer questions, that you haven't seen before, that I haven't talked about, that probably are not in the book, and hopefully I will have given you all the ingredients to come up with the answers to those questions, and I'll see who are the A students who can come up with those answers. So, as I said, my exams definitely are hard. I've given up trying to make them fall to the level of the students in the class. What I will do afterwards is drop the cutoffs, if necessary, downward to reflect the grades on the exams. Usually my exam averages are between 65 and 70%, so they're not killer, but they do fall into the hard category. As far as grading goes, what I will guarantee you for now is that 90% will be an A-, 80% B-minus, 70%, C-minus, 60%, D-minus, and below that you don't want to ask. We will decide on whether 91 or 92 or 93% ends up being an A, just depending on where students fall and what your GSIs tell me about how you guys performed in the class. So the GSIs will have a voice in that, but then ultimately it'll be my say, I guess, my final decision. I do listen to them quite a bit. If my exams turn out to be harder than I think, then we'll just drop these cutoffs down as much as we need to, again, taking into account the GSI advice. Okay, if for some reason you need to make a makeup, call me or talk to me. There is, my office is the introductory biology office, and there is a secretary there, so if I'm not there, you can talk to her, and she's very good. She's done millions of these, so what she decides is basically as good as what I would decide in those kind of cases. Okay. We've covered who am I, who are you. You guys are a pretty good group, a pretty competitive lot. One of the perks of teaching at a good school like this is that I get gratification out of talking to high-level students like you. Somewhere between 50, half and two-thirds of you want to be pre-med, pre-dent, pre-vet, whatever. Another one-fifth or one-quarter of you are some sort of biology, molecular, organismal, ecology, school of natural resource. 10 or 15% of you are engineers, and about 5% of you are lost. You don't fall into any one of the above categories. The lost people are often the most interesting people, art majors, or just education majors, or people just interested in biology. So if you have taken a different path or an odd path to get here, recognize that and recognize that you're in a competitive class, but you're also appreciated, and I like hearing from all of you, especially the people that have weird reasons for being here. What have we gotten ourselves into? I hope, and one of the advantages of a relatively smaller group like this is I hope that lecture can be at least a modest amount of back and forth. If you have questions, please raise your hands right away. Don't just listen to me and scribble down everything I say. It's likely to be wrong, or many times it could be wrong. Or sometimes I'll just say things to be provocative. Or if I have an opinion, it's just my opinion, and in that case can be challenged just as much as anybody else's opinion. One of the favorite cartoons I ever saw is this one, which I think definitely applies to this class, and I hope you will behave appropriately. The point of that is, and I've seen it in many great lecture hall, big lecture halls, is that the heads just bob up and down in tune with what the professor is scribbling, and nobody ever asks a question. So don't let me get away with something you disagree with. Challenge me. Challenge all your professors, but definitely make it interactive. And if you don't, I'm going to start calling on people. And when I figure out some of your names, then you're definitely fair game. There's only one person I know right now, and she's squirming in her seat. So I'm going to try and make this class go back and forth a little bit. Okay. Oh, one other thing I forgot to mention, and this goes back to the exams. I recognize that my exams are hard. I will give you guys an opportunity to get bonus points on the exams. But, and I'll explain that more later, it's going to be sort of a semi-experiment that we'll do in how we award these bonus points, and I will talk about it in a later lecture between the second and third exams. So you guys will probably end up thinking that I'm a twisted bastard for giving the bonus points in the way I'm going to do it, but we'll just see how it comes out. And so don't worry too much about your grades just yet. You know, the exams may be hard, and I may do some unusual things in the class, but in the end, I do realize that we have to give reasonable sets of grades. Okay. As this always happens, my pages get scrambled and I get stuck. Alrighty. Okay. Alright, a few last sort of nags and reminders. Attendance in lecture is critical, mostly because I don't follow your textbook all that closely. I will talk about some of the same topics, but I talk about them in a different order, and I definitely bring in examples that aren't mentioned in your textbook. What I would say in terms of this class is that it's a damn shame that it happens during the nicest weather of the year. Don't let that be a distraction to you. Taking this class in spring is like taking two classes in the fall term or the spring term or in the winter term. So, not that it's not doable, but if you have a job and you're out playing frisbee and you've got organic chem and you've got this, then it's hard. The class moves very fast. One of the few bad things I like or don't like about teaching in spring is that there's almost no time for you to sort of sit quietly and digest what I'm saying. I'll talk about transcription 1 hour, it's translation the next hour. 22 hours later, we're talking about mutation and regulation of genes. That would take a week and a half in the regular term, and I think that would give you guys some time to wrestle with it in your mind and understand it maybe at a little bit deeper level than you're going to during this class. There are 42 lectures, just as many or more as in a regular term. I cover just as much of the topics as we do in a regular term. It's kind of like drinking from a fire hose, is the only way I can describe it. So enjoy your summer, but focus on this class as well. Or have a job, but focus on this class. Don't try and do a million things. This won't be a complete blow-off. Okay. Two last things. Number one, my sense of humor tends to be a little bit dry. Half the time people don't get that I'm making a joke. I can live with that. Mostly I'm up here amusing myself, and I like me, so that doesn't bother me. So if you think I'm pulling your leg, it's possibly true, and if you really still are, have it, a question in your head, just raise your hand and we'll say, was that supposed to be a joke or something like that. Second thing is I try and keep my personal opinions out of this class. I've already mentioned that I think there's one role for me to present information to you. I do have opinions. They may creep into the class, but I try and keep them out. If they do come into the class, then realize that they're just my personal opinions. They don't count more than anybody else's in the course. Okay. Anything there? Anything you want to ask me about how the course is going to work?
Overrides.
Yeah, let me ask this. How many of you are not crisped into this class and still trying to get in? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I probably missed one or two, so it's about 10 or so. If we have a full house, then I am going to ask them to open up one more lab section, in which case you should be able to crisp in. Other than that, there'll be a waiting list, and Aaron in the bio office will do the overrides. So I just, before I go today, I'm going to count how many people are in the room, and then by tomorrow I'll know whether they're going to open up that site. So any of you who are not crisped in, just pretend like you are in the class for now. Go to whichever lab you want to go to, the Wednesday afternoon or the Thursday morning lab, and I will let you know then whether we're going to open a section or not. I should be able to make that announcement in lecture tomorrow. So for today, we're not going to issue any overrides, but we'll either open a section or we'll try and squeeze in as many of you people as we can. Okay, anything else? Thanks for mentioning. Oh yeah, one other thing. The temperature control in this room is really bizarre. So whoever ends up sitting there, if it's going to be Andrea or if it's going to be you that sits there on a regular basis, I'm going to make you thermostat man, okay? So unless you wear flannel shirts every day, then maybe we're not going to make it. But I don't know. For me, I don't feel the same temperature that you guys do. Obviously, it's a little bit warmer in this room for me than it is for you guys. So if it seems chilly or if it seems warm, let me know or let Thermostat Man know, and he'll go up and he'll just fiddle with it. The trouble with this thermostat is that a little adjustment here makes a huge adjustment in the room. So what will probably happen is that it will be like a sauna and then an ice box and a sauna and an ice box, but eventually we'll all get used to it. Okay. Okay, let me get into sort of the more serious stuff. And what I'm hoping to do with the remainder of this first hour is just give you some bit of perspective, show where biology fits into sort of the rest of your education, and hopefully I can begin that framework that we're going to fill in the rest of the term. So I have entitled this lecture, Philosophy of Science, or at least that's the point I'm talking about now. I forgot to do it now, but usually I will put a rough outline of what I'm going to cover up there so you know where I am in the lecture. And the reading for this is chapter 1, pages 1 through 16. And if you look at the web notes, it will tell you the specific pages that I'm covering for each lecture. The syllabus in your course pack has the broad chapter reading, or the broad chapter that we're involved in. The specific notes on the webs have the page numbers, and I will always put the page numbers up when we talk about it. My advice to you would be to try and read the stuff before lecture so that you have some idea of how it all fits together before I get here or before I start talking. Hopefully my lecture should make all the pieces fall into place. If you're like most people and don't read until the night before the exam, then at least these will tell you the pages to focus on. So I'm going to start with some definitions, and I don't really care to make you memorize these definitions, but at least if I put them down like this, we'll start from a common place. My definition of philosophy is any thought directed toward evaluation of sensory experience or mental constructs. What do I mean by that? Basically, any thinking you do that's trying to figure out what's going on and what you're seeing and hearing and feeling, or what you can think about and conceive, any of that activity I would call broadly in the realm of philosophy. Science, I would define as a branch of philosophy seeking to organize and explain material phenomena. Okay? So the point of science is basically to understand the world, to understand physical things that you can see and feel and measure and touch and hear. Okay? So science doesn't really address questions of why are we here. It might address how did we get here, or why are we like this and not like that. So it focuses on material phenomena. Science is a couple of properties that you can use to explain science. It is empirical, which is to say, based on observation of the senses. So it has to be something that we can, like I said, see, feel, hear, somehow measure. And it could be our senses as extended by instruments. So just because we can't see bacteria doesn't mean we can't study them scientifically, because we have microscopes and other machines that can help us see bacteria or in other ways detect bacteria. Okay, so empirical means it's based on some sort of concrete facts or observable facts. Science is also inductive, which means that general principles are derived from specific observations. So if we notice every morning that the sun rises in the east, then we may say, aha, I think the sun rises in the east because of whatever theory you come up with. The inductive part is trying to figure out the general principle from the repeated observation. So these principles we call hypotheses, theories, laws, etc. And I'm not going to go to the trouble of defining those. Generally, a law is a principle which we believe more strongly in than a hypothesis is, or a law is a principle that has more observations underpinning it than a hypothesis does. But basically, we get ideas of how things work from the observations. We call those things hypotheses, theories, observations, laws, whatever. Okay. Science is also deductive, and that's sort of the opposite of inductive. That is to say, once we have the general principles, they allow us to make specific predictions. So once you decide that the reason that the sun rises in the east is because of the way the world is spinning or the way the earth rotates around the sun, I hope there's not any astronomy majors here, but whatever you decide it is, then you would predict, I think the sun is going to rise in the east again tomorrow. Okay? That seems like a fairly obvious one, but that's just, as I said, working down from the general principle. And sort of a corollary to what I just said, therefore, science is testable. Predictions can be, or are, maybe let me put it that way, are verified by experimentation. Okay, so if the sun rose in the west tomorrow, that would upset a lot of people and upset a lot of theories. Okay. Generally, we say that hypotheses and predictions are falsifiable, meaning that if the sun rose in the east tomorrow and every day next week, that would be consistent with my theory of whatever's causing it, but it wouldn't necessarily prove my theory. There could be some other reason, which I don't know, that's making the sun rise in the east. However, it would just take one day of the sun rising in the west to prove all my theories wrong. So theories are generally more easily falsifiable than they are absolutely proven true. What usually happens is, you know, if every day for the last 3,000 years the sun has risen in the east, then you begin to think, your law or your theory or your hypothesis might be right because there's such an overwhelming amount of evidence to support it. Okay? That certainly will be true in biology. There will be cases where we believe things more strongly or less strongly based on how much evidence we have, though in no case, theory of evolution, what have you, can we absolutely 100% say this is exactly how it happened beyond a shadow of a doubt. Okay? So why are you here? Why is biology in the School of Literature, Sciences, and the Arts? Because it is a branch of philosophy, because it is an attempt to understand the world, just as math or psychology or religion are different ways to try and make sense of the world. Not all of these ways are compatible with each other. Science has all of these properties that basically these other things don't. For example, math starts with a few assumptions and is completely deductive beyond that. Okay? You don't go out and observe things in math. You don't sort of observe 2 plus 2 is 2 or 4. 2 plus 2 is whatever it is, and you deduce how the rest of it must go because 2 plus 2 is 4. Okay? Religion, for example, depending on what you believe, is either revelatory, meaning it was handed down, or somebody interpreted it based on a revelation, or it's intuitive, something that you study inside yourself and come up with. But it certainly is not predictive or testable. So my feeling is, like I said, that these are all different ways of looking at the world, understanding the world, making sense of the world, but that you can't really talk about the two simultaneously. In this course, we're going to look at biology as a branch of science, and we're going to follow that approach. Okay. The one assumption that I would say that sort of underlies science is science assumes that there is some objective truth, that there is a fundamental set of physical and chemical laws which governs the universe. Okay. What science is about is trying to figure out how the universe works. If those rules are different on Tuesday than they are on Wednesday, then science is a hopeless game. Okay? If God is out there changing the laws of physics willy-nilly, then God is mean, but scientists are doomed. Okay? If science is looking for an objective truth and there is no objective truth, if we can't trust our senses, then science will fail. Again, the strength of science is really based on its ability to make successful predictions. If you study how cells work in the body, if you study how cancer comes into being, you should be able to understand that and predict, I can do this and this and this to disrupt cancer cells. The value of science is that those predictions are right and let you understand the world in ways that help people. Okay. There is a statement in your textbook somewhere in the first chapter, which may not be the most romantic statement in the world, but sort of puts this, I think, in its proper light. Organisms appear to be a triumph of organic chemistry. The one thing that explains why you have to take Chem 210 and 215. And as I said, it may not be fun to think of yourself as nothing more than a giant test tube with 10,000 or 100 million reactions going on simultaneously, But to me, it's all the more remarkable to think of, I mean, you do one reaction in chemistry, and how often does it go bad? Your body is, like I said, literally hundreds of millions of reactions going on simultaneously, all properly controlled, that allow you to see, think, and even begin to grasp at the whole idea of how you can comprehend such subjects in the first place. So these chemical reactions let you think about the chemical reactions that are going on to let you think about them, if you understand what I'm saying. So to me, that's as remarkable and awe-inspiring as any other sort of view of the universe. Okay, so that's my soapbox for right now, and I'll move on. All right. Biology, simple definition here, is just the study of life. So that begs the question, what is alive? Okay, who's going to give me a definition of what's alive? Somebody better rescue poor Andrea. I've got a finger and I'm not afraid to use it.
Things that react and reproduce.
React and reproduce. Do you have a grandmother?
Yeah.
Is she reproducing?
Lately.
Is she alive?
Yeah.
So your definition doesn't work.
She's dead.
You're happy to redefine her as dead? Capable of reproducing at some point in her life cycle? I mean, the same goes true for priests and nuns and capable of reproducing at some point. What do you mean by react? Or somebody else, what does he mean by react? Poke her with a stick and she yells at you. Has to be able to respond to environment. Okay? What are other properties? I mean, what it's coming down to is we're going to not really have one easy definition of alive and not alive. What we're going to end up doing is just coming up with a bunch of properties of living organisms. So what are other properties of living organisms? I know you were all made to memorize this in seventh grade.
Consume energy.
Consume energy. Okay. Who else?
Made of cells.
Made of cells, okay. That's at least true for everything we know on this planet, that their living creatures are made of cells. All right. Let's see what I've got on my list. I'll just give you my list and we'll see how much that overlaps. Metabolism. I've got growth and reproduction. So growth in size and growth number. And then I've got evolution and adaptation. So adaptation is basically responding to your environment. Metabolism is all the reactions that you do to gather energy from the environment and convert it into useful compounds. Made of cells, like I said, is how life is on this planet. It's sort of a consequence of what's happened in evolution here. And reproduction we've also got covered. Okay. My sort of semi-solid definition of life would be anything that can convert materials from its environment into more copies of itself. Okay, so you have to be able to take those things, those sugars, those chemicals, those ions, those building blocks that are out there, and convert them, that's the metabolism part, into more copies of itself, so it makes more of itself and increases in number. Living organisms have to be able to respond to their environment to either move away from bad things or move towards, to be able to find more and collect more materials from its environment. And it's also an inevitable consequence that in making copies of themselves, they don't make perfect copies, therefore the subsequent generations change and there's evolution.
Would you say that has to be a natural occurrence? I mean, when you say convert, it makes me think of cloning. We talk about science as taking materials and making copies of its ourselves. Or
cloning would be reproducing, in a sense. It's asexual reproduction. But even cloning would not work if the cell could not carry out metabolism to make the proteins that second cell or that second organism needs, the membranes, the ribosomes, the DNA, the RNA. So cloning does require metabolism and growth in size before you can split into two cells or two organisms, which would be then asexual reproduction. So cloning does fit under sort of creation of new life. You can think of lots of things. Like the classic example is a virus alive? And my opinion is no, it's not, because it cannot metabolize unless it infects a cell and convinces the cell to do the metabolizing for it. But things like apple seeds, which remain dormant and essentially are doing very little, if any, metabolism, are they alive? Well, I guess we would say yes, because they're capable of metabolism and capable of growth and reproduction under the right conditions.
What about like a person in a coma?
Person in a coma is still metabolizing and...
They can't do anything with the environment.
That's correct. And now we're getting into sort of sticky philosophical and legal definitions. I'm sure you've heard of cases where they can still reproduce. The hospital worker goes in there and takes advantage of somebody. So I'm sorry to say it, but these things do happen. They have some of the properties, but they no longer have all of the properties. It gets back to where we say, is his grandmother still alive? Well, nobody's going to argue that case, but people do actually argue the case of, is a coma person alive? Comatose person. I got to be proper a little bit. Any other questions? Let me close out this hour anyway with one last exhortation to you. And that is that this is the age of biology. Okay, I personally think biology is the most exciting science and that this is the most exciting time to be a biologist. Physics had its heyday, they blew up the atomic bomb, now it's all boring. Okay? Chemistry, if you were like in Germany 100 years ago, fun, but now it's just boring too. It's just more of the same. Biology, we are still figuring out how life works. We are still figuring out basic fundamental questions, how cancer works, whether there's life on other planets. All the interesting questions, I think, are in biology. I'll give you the atom bomb. It's amazing to me that it took as long for people to figure out these things in biology as they did. The atomic bomb was blown up in 1945. We didn't figure out that DNA was the molecule of inheritance until 1953. Okay? So the most central, essential element of what makes me different from you or any of you different from each other, we didn't know that until after we'd blown up an atomic bomb. There are at least 500,000 new research articles per year coming out in biology. That's just a tremendous explosion in our knowledge. Because of that, nobody can keep up with all the specifics in the course. I am going to try and focus on some unifying themes in this course, some concepts that are true for whatever level of biology or whatever area of biology you guys are specifically interested in. Okay, I'm going to start off my next lecture, then the next hour, with those themes, and we'll move on from there. So be back by like 10 after. Somebody in your lab or somebody that should fill in. Good luck to you. I won't say that 100% of the stuff on this exam is going to come from lecture, but probably 90% of it at least will come from other lecture. So, but that's only 75% of the course. We're still going to do well in the lab part, so those might be.
I'm registered for the lab on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and it should be no problem.
Say that again.
Okay, registered, right.